tons of other things I'm sure come in, yeah. But I want to just put the context, it's kind of interesting that our last meeting, we had a session on self-publishing, and now we're going to have a session with a publisher. So there's just like two opposite ends of this of the publishing spectrum. And I know at the end of our last session, some people were asking questions about, well, what would a publisher do? So we have a publisher in the house to satisfy that curiosity, among other things. Okay. Lydia said that she'd like to speak on the beauty of books. She has a 40-year career in book publishing. She has a global book publishing company, Lydia England Limited. In addition, she has a book-selling subsidiary named Star Books. So she has a lot of experience, and not just within South Carolina. And her books that she tend to publish tend to be beautiful, saleable books, and the subjects ranging from the Low Country of the South to Paris and beyond. Lydia.
Thank you. Well, I'm so glad to be with you all. It's not often that I get to be with this many writers, and people have things that they want to say. I'm going to stand, that's the artist in me, so I can move around easily. Can everybody hear me?
No.
Say.
A little louder, please.
A little louder? Okay, how's that? Is that better? All right, thank you. Today the format will be, I'm just going to talk and then y'all are going to ask questions. We're going to talk about books. The type of book publishing that I do is a little bit different perhaps than the books that you all have been accustomed to writing. We publish books that, like Bill said, are two things. They're beautiful and saleable. And so I brought several examples of our books, and then I've got some other things that I'm going to show you here. But first, I kind of wanted to see, I presume that everyone's a writer, so let's just have a show of hands. Everybody a writer? Yes. So how many would consider themselves authors? All right, yes. How many are self-published? How many are traditionally published? How many are published by a hybrid publishing? Something in between. Okay. So that's good to know. You know, I think we're all pretty aware that publishing has changed dramatically in probably the last 15 years. With the consolidation of traditional publishing houses, the onset of mobile devices, which we can read on, and you know, things like print on demand, we just call that POD, it's really changed the landscape of publishing so that it's much more accessible to many more people. And in that, there's probably the demise of some of the older, more traditional houses that have not made it. And, you know, one of the things that traditional publishing companies sometimes look at today is the celebrity marketeer. And I don't know about you, but I sometimes struggle to know how a sports star or a media celebrity might also be an interior designer, an author, or an expert on cosmetics, for that matter. However, celebrity sells, and we see a lot of that in our culture in America. We see it all over, but I particularly see it here. And yet we know that there's so much more to be said and done in book publishing than just having a celebrity mouthpiece or marketer out there pumping goods out to us. So we like to do really beautiful books and books that people will enjoy and will value. And one thing's for certain, regardless of all the media that we have coming at us in all the multitude of ways, we still love a book. We still love a book that we can touch, we can hold, or we can give. And you know, we all read on a number of different devices, perhaps. I think I make judgments about reading for pleasure or reading for information, for example. I think we all do that every day. And I find that when I read for enjoyment, which is rare, because typically I'm reading for work, I really want to read a book. And I really want to feel the paper of that book. And I don't really want to have to worry about whether the screen is bright enough or anything. You know, as long as I have a light, I'm good with my book. So I've been drawn to books my whole life. When I was 4 years old, I remember holding a pencil and drawing a small letter A, like they taught us, and it was a circle with a stick, draw the stick. And I remember having a very rich sensation that it was so satisfying to me as a little kid that I just thought, this is what I'm going to be. This is what I'm going to be. Now, at that time, I didn't know if that was a writer, an author, or an artist. I really didn't know. I just knew, this is what I'm going to be. So by the time I was 17, I was hard at it. And I went to college while I was in high school. I got out and I started working in publishing at the ripe old age of 17 in Washington, D.C. And it was a lovely experience. I started out working at the New Republic book and magazine company. So the day I started, my boss, Marty Peretz, had just come back from Golda Meir's funeral. So we had lots of people parading through there. One of the editors that I worked for is Dorothy Wickenden. She's the editor of The New Yorker. We just called her Dot because she was just a little blonde-haired person right out of school. She was lovely to work with. And that really gave me a fine appreciation for all types of books, literature, novels, what I would term picture books, and everything in between. And at the end of the week, as I was about to commute home, I would go into the book room, which was a room that literally was filled with books. Somewhere in there, there was a sofa and a coffee table. We could take whatever books we wanted to home. And those were all the review copies that we got every week, because it was a weekly. The magazine was weekly. That was heavily political, and then the book company kind of grew out of that. And so it was really intriguing to be a part of all of that. And I kept moving and learning more and more about publishing, and as I did so, I began to reach some points of difference because I understood that publishing is a business of scale, and what works for Tom Clancy on newsprint does not work for the person who has 5,000 or less copies. So the scale doesn't really come down. It has to be a different model. So I began to craft my own business model based on my love for books and what I thought I could do and put out. And so I started. And that was 41 years ago. So today, we create books at our, we really call it an atelier because we do everything there. It's called Marsh House. And we have warehouses, but we choose not to work in a warehouse environment, so we create our books in a really lovely environment here on the island. And then I have a small office in London. My husband is English, so I travel back and forth and do some projects there. So I thought it might be interesting to take a little peek behind the curtain for you guys and to see kind of how we do what we do. And so I get calls every week with people who have manuscripts or concepts, or maybe they just have an idea for a book. This is what I've been getting a lot lately. I have an idea for a book. Great. Do you have a summary or an outline? No, I haven't written it yet. I'm like, really? Okay. You have an idea for a book? Yes, I've got a great idea. Okay. Please go write your book. So it's funny what people think publishing is about, and I'm sure you all have stories of what you've experienced in publishing, and I'm sure it varies and ranges far and wide. But what we do at Starbooks is, like Bill said, we really craft beautiful books. And we craft books that were very simple. We typically craft books that have words and images in them, as opposed to just reading books or just picture books. So we like to do some of both. And we like to be where our books stand out. We do sell in bookstores. We're Barnes & Noble vendor, so on and so on. However, we really like to be in stores where the face of our book will stand out. Because in a bookstore, typically, this is it. This doesn't say anything about your book. This is the most expensive real estate right here. And what we like to do is we like to be where the face of the book will be out. And we know if we can do that, that we stand a good chance that we can get that person to walk over and actually pick it up and look at it. Flip it, read the flap, back cover, and then make a decision on whether or not they'd like the book. And that's different than reading books, where you have a lot of online sources to guide the reader as far as reviewers and such. So that's a little bit different for us. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the anatomy of a book. Let me get this here. I take up a lot of space. I have a really big desk, and I usually outgrow that. So who can tell me what this is? What?
It's the case.
It absolutely is. You're going to get a prize for that. This is the hardcover of a book. This happens to be a special edition book. So it's got a leather finish. It's got the gold foil stamping. Then you can see that it's made up of boards with spaces here. This is called a square spine. Some books have a round spine. If it's a round spine, it has no board in it, and it's actually not very stable. So we like square back books. So can anybody tell me how book pages are held together?
Glue.
Yes.
And also thread.
Yes. You're very good.
I used to be a printer.
Good. Oh, that's interesting.
We have to.
That's wonderful. I bought my first printing press when I was about 14 years old. It weighed 600 pounds. And as I carried it around, I thought, I lived in a farmhouse, and I thought, this might go through the floor. But it was a good machine that's still in use, actually. So books are printed on huge sheets of paper. We typically print in 16-page signatures. A signature is the word for the big piece of paper. And that means that on one side of the sheet of paper, there are 8 pages. And the numbers of the pages don't make sense. They're not in order. Another 8 pages are on the back side of the sheet. When that goes through the press, we typically use perfector presses so that it's printing both sides of the piece of paper at the same time, in full color, typically. It may fold it right at the end of the press, or the folding may come as a separate operation. When that huge sheet of paper is folded down, it's not open. Its edges are folded. So to release the pages, it's cut here and here and here. And from that, you get something like this. But you can see it's still not going to stay in a book. So each of these is folded. There's little sections. You can see it has little, it's a tiny little numbering system here. These are stitched together on their own, and this becomes the book block, which is just text pages. Now, it used to be when people bought a book, this is all they bought. The books didn't have a cover. You bought your book, and then you went to the book cover maker, and he bound your book. And that was typically going to be in leather. He probably also put a coating, either paint or some other gold leaf, silver leaf, on the edge to keep it from taking on moisture. And from that, you would have a complete, typically leather-bound book in those days. So we've moved forward from that. Today, you can have a hardbound book that actually is glued, as Jean said, that's not stitched. Conversely, you can have a softbound book that also is stitched, and that means it's going to last a long time. It'll probably outlast the paper it's printed on. because the paper, a lot of times it's just kind of two grades up above newsprint. So we have our pages, and they're all stitched now, and they're cut so they're open. So how does this stay in this? Because there's nothing to hold it in.
Isn't it glued into?
The purpose of in-sheets, which we always overlook, is to hold the book block into the case, the hard cover of the book. So what happens is, it's glued here, and you have to remember this is stitched, and this, where you see the white lines, these are glued together to each other. So when you look in the front of the book, you really never notice it, but there is a lap there that holds the pages into the book. See this right here? It's about a quarter inch of glue. And then there's some other tape that's used to help affix it in this area to let it bend and have a really good hinge that won't pop. And that happens on the front and the back, of course. These can be printed or not printed. In all different types of paper. We like to use a certain one. It's one of our signature looks. And then that is put under a lot of pressure, and it's crimped here, which you always see in a book. And that takes up the space here where there's no board. So when all that's done under really a lot of pressure, then you get a really good seal. And that's what makes a book stable. If a book is real wobbly, like this, it means that it didn't get a tight enough binding. So all of that has to be figured out by the craftsmen that are doing these operations. And whether they're done by hand or mechanized, at some point it does come down to craft. They have to figure out what's the tension for this. How tight does this have to be, you know, adhered to the board? Various other factors. And they have to do it with an eye to quality in the finished piece, because they can do the whole process and the very last thing that they do could ruin it. So they have to, the farther you get, and Jean probably knows this, the farther you get into the manufacturing process, the more costly an error becomes. And so that is how you build that type of book. This book actually is a special edition, and it goes into a slip case, which is not to be confused with a case, which is actually the hardcover. And then what I'd like to do is show you another one of our features. We like to do this embedded photo in a book, and we typically will do that on an art and photography book or wherever it's appropriate. This could be a painting or it can be a photograph, it matters not. And again, it's done with a lot of pressure, and I'll show you a different type of one. This is an art book. This is a very interesting book. I think this is one of the most enriching experiences of my life, because the man who painted the paintings in this book, he paints with his mouth because he had a ski accident when he was 16 and he's a quadriplegic. I'm sorry, when he was 26, I said 16. So this is his story, and it's titled Flight of the Mind because he's very interested in flying. He always has been, even though he can't move. So we have that. And then this book, let me just do this where you can see it. is comprised of his paintings, and he paints very large paintings. So this is his story. You can see him there painting. And he didn't know how to paint when he started. He was just an all-American guy. And he and his girlfriend had just graduated with degrees in physical education and sports. They worked at one of the ski resorts in North Carolina. And he took one more run one day, and that was his last run. So when they determined that he was going to live and that he was going to be all right, although he couldn't move, his girlfriend had a tough decision to make. She had to decide, do I stay with this person given these extreme changes, or what do I do? So I'm happy to say that 30-something years later, they're married, they run a business. He made the decision he didn't want to be part of. He wanted to compete in life. He did not want to be seen only as a disabled person. So they set about, really he just decided he was going to be a painter. And he did the time. His wife puts his paints out for him every morning. Now, because he's a good painter, he paints all day, every day, and that's how they make their living. And they live between Asheville and Sanibel Island. So that's a little bit of in-depth about his story, but I was so fascinated to meet them and to do this book. In the back, there's a gallery of his paintings, and they do a lot at Biltmore House and various things that are in that area. But you can see that the reproduction of this book, it was quite critical and quite something to do, particularly with the black background, because there's only so much ink to go around on a piece of paper. And when the printing press is going, if you have a heavy solid area up there, it could pull ink from a smaller photograph that you have back on the back side of the sheet. So I say all that to say, when I presented the advanced copy of this book to Marcus and Anne, they immediately burst out crying. It was just a sudden reaction. And Anne said, "Wow, it's really heavy, Marcus, feel it." And she plopped it on his head. Because if you do this to him, he can't feel that. So, and he laughed. This book is sold for $95, and then there's special editions in slip cases. They have a DVD of their life story and so on. And so they sell this book for anywhere between $695 or $95, depending on what else you get with it. And they've done really well with it. I think we did 4,000 of these books. And so just a special story and a really heavy book. Probably weighs about 6 pounds.
I think I met him at an art show. It was either at Honeyhorn.
Yes,
or
could have.
Shelter Cove Fine Art. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could have they're quite something. As I said, it really enriched my life. So there's some other things that I'll show you. Let me show you this particular type of binding. This is an Asian-inspired binding. This is a Toshin book. This is not one of our books, but it goes to illustrate a point. This is a particular type of Asian binding. This is not the way regular books are sewn. They're sewn quite differently with a lot more thread. And this book, each page is a folded sheet of paper. So it behaves a different way, and you never feel a raw edge, because when you turn the page, it's a fold. And then this is the case of the book with these special little things. So there's all sorts of things that can be done with books. We're working on one right now called The Carolinas, and it's a two-sided book. One side is North Carolina and one side is South Carolina. And that's a concept that you can see here. This book is called Types Best Remembered and Types Best Forgotten. Mm-hmm. So this is a book about typefaces, and you can see that some of it's right side up, some of it's upside down, unless you turn it this way. Mm-hmm. And let's see what this binding is. So in this case, the spine reads both ways. Oh, thank you.
Sure.
And they have both titles on the spine coming together. So that book also we did not do, but a friend of mine did it. And then I brought some other examples of reading books that we've done. We like to make our books beautiful, as I said, and that goes for the case of the book as well as the dust jacket. A lot of times people will discard or remove their dust jacket for reading ease, and of course reviews there. Here's another example of a sweet little book. This is one of my favorite projects of all time. It has what we call a three-piece binding. That's where one area of the book is different than the other area as far as coverings. So these two have to be joined. And this also has a foil stamping along the edge, as well as a dull lamination and then a gloss lamination over the letters. Can you see that difference? It gives them a little swing there. And this book, it's almost like a chapbook because of the handy size. It's printed in two colors of ink. It's a black and a burgundy. And we tried to maximize the graphic appeal and then use those colors on the end sheets and stuff. And it's sold very well. It's just a sweet little, very handy-sized book. Let's see. Here's another. Sometimes when we do illustrated books, in this case, this is a children's book. The children's book marketplace is pretty finicky. It's I would say visually, for those who write children's books, the choice of illustrator is one that is most crucial to your writing efforts. If you don't have the right illustrator, they're not going to convey your work. We are so driven by what we see. You know, we want to read anything that has letters on it. But moreover, we will gravitate to an image. And the illustrator is so crucial. For example, this is a book about inspirational poetry. But really, what's going to make you pick it up is the illustration on the front, and maybe the title. So for this book, the painter, before she started, we worked to work out the storyboard. Because of her style, she paints in watercolor very fast and very free. But she draws her sketches very, very tight. So this is an example of her storyboard. Now this is the finished storyboard. It didn't start out this way. This is pretty detailed. Prior versions just had the flow worked out, or on what pages the character would actually appear, on other pages, the various elements that needed to be in there. So this is highly finished, and this is what she painted from. And I'm happy to say that the book is very true to the plan. And in this case, it's good to have a really solid plan. because the execution could still remain free. And if you look at her watercolors, they're defined, but she's got a lot of washes and a lot of, you know, quirky brush strokes, and that's her signature. She's in Savannah. So another fun project to do. Let's see. Then we have another feature that we developed, and it's in our Hilton Head Island book. It's called Snap Click. We're really excited about this. We've worked on it for quite some time. The Snap Click technology allows you to take your smartphone or your tablet and set it at an image and have it launch an aerial video, music, someone performing, and the books come alive like that. We can do that on every page of the book. And it's a lot of fun.
Let me see if I can show you. I love that book.
Do you? Have you done it? Let me see if I can do one that...
So every image launches something else?
Not every image in this book, but it can. And it can launch, for example, I could, with a click, I could come right out and begin talking to the person. Let me just show you.
Is it an app that you have to download?
You do. Download a free app.
Julia, when did you do this? I mean, why would you do that? That's so cool.
So this is just the beach. And you can see if I move it, you can see the edge of the book. It's totally triggered off of that. Let me see if I can show you another example.
That was with a camera club, right? That you did that?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's a dolphin. And I'll have this set up so you all can look at it more closely. So this is, these are baby dolphin. Coming up.
Vivian, is this the book you did with the camera phone?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when we developed the Snap Click technology, we knew that we were moving into a video realm. We have kids today that have only ever seen videos on their device. You know, still pictures are not as alluring to them as a video. That's not the reason we did it. We did it because we want people to have a value added to their book, and we want them to open up our books and have a rich experience. But the potential for Snap Click is off the charts because we can make it go from anything to anything. We've got drone video in here. You can fly around the marsh. You can fly over Poligny. It's beautiful. And we wanted people, for this particular book, we wanted people who are visiting to be able to have a nice takeaway, particularly when they're snowbound in their homes and they're cold.
So what was the price of that book?
This book is $34.95. And we have a couple of, probably three different price points that we work with, $29.95, $34.95, and then sometimes $39.95. Then we do higher end price points, but they're probably not the books you're going to see in stores. So that's Snap Click, and we like it. And when I observe people looking at Snap Click, I try not to tell them too much about it. I really want them to experience it because I want to see their reaction. I want to know that, yeah, it's working, or no, it's not working. And all of the reaction I've gotten heretofore, people enjoy it, and that doesn't matter if they're this big or they're big people. They really enjoy it. So I'll have this here, and you all can...
And one other question. I couldn't tell, but is there sound with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. It can be... You can have sound or not. It's really up to the content.
So for a book like that, you may have an author, you may have a photographer, but now you have a videographer as well, who's going out in different places to find imagery that syncs or responds to the image that's on a page, right?
Yes. And we have a new book coming out later in the year. It's called Along Southern Roads. And that book is a compilation. It will have music in it. It will have poetry readings and videos, as well as the book on its own, which will be stunningly beautiful. And so we're really excited about that, because to me, it just bridges a gap. It helps bridge the gap between people who are saying, books, and then, they haven't seen it. And we always make sure it can stand on its own. So I have a couple of ideas for reading books. We're real simple. We just call them reading books or picture books or books with words and pictures. So one of the things that, and this is not, it's not unique, there are subscription services for books where you can publish a chapter and do it as a subscription service, like Mr. Dickens did, or like Julian Fellowes, who did Downton Abbey and who writes about posh people in England. He has a novel called Belgravia, and it's $2 a chapter. So every week, you could get your chapter. You couldn't get them all at one time, and this was probably, it was just after Downton Abbey ceased production, so I guess about a year ago. And I happened to see him at the airport in London, and I thought, yes, I'm going to take a look at that. So about every 7 days, you could get another chapter of the book. You couldn't get it before then, and you had to pay $2 every time. So there are some services that do that. One is called PubSlush, and one is called Unbound. So if anybody has any ideas that they think would work that way, there's a couple of services that could help you do that. Not a new idea. Charles Dickens and a lot of other writers have done that, because that's the way they did it. They just didn't have the software to do it for them. Another thing that we're already seeing, but I think is going to be big in books, is this idea of commentary, or like we see on a DVD, a director's cut. Already, we know that if we get an ebook, we can see other people's comments or passages that people have highlighted in the book. But what we are beginning to see, and I think what we will see more of, are not only comments from like peer to peer, but a director's cut, or there may be enriched content up under the ebook phrase or page or whatever. There's something to click on. I would have to argue, well, when is too much? Because I think we all suffer from, so much coming at us. But it is a way for publishers and authors to give a value-added bump and a point of difference out there in the vast marketplace. So I'd just like to close this part of the presentation with something that Scott Moyers, who's the editor at Penguin Press, said. And what he says is, in the face of the ebook, there is an imperative now to make the entire physical package itself special. That's really what we do. And when we talk about books, we talk about what is the package. What is it that is going to give the reader satisfaction in their hand and in their mind and in their heart? And that's what we want to do. So, thank you. Please, questions, comments, start paper wads? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have to ask you a rotten question. Do you print in this country or out of this country or both?
Both. We print all over the world. We print here. We print in Canada. We print in India, Malaysia, Italy, and China. So just, it depends on logistics, craft, paper. You know, recently there have been a couple of big paper increases, and that, you know, seriously affects, well, it's the supply and demand, because paper is a commodity, so that seriously affects globally the pricing on paper, top to bottom, so. Yes, hey.
Did you develop the app, or is that an app that you can kind of leverage from that's already out there?
The technology is already out there. It's called augmented reality. And it's something that already is in use. And what we did is we figured out how to use that technology the way we wanted to, which is in books. So but it's called augmented reality.
So you have your own app using augmented reality.
Yes,
you're able to
yes.
launch an app,
yes.
register, put it up on Apple or wherever.
Yes. Pokemon Go is augmented reality for those of you that know what
that's
that
really
is.
Cool.
So it's, yes.
I was just curious, in particular, the Marcus Thomas book, I'm assuming that the majority of the authors and the photographers are contacting you.
Yes, we work in a number of different ways. I'll talk just a minute about that if I could. We do a number of different scenarios. There's nothing that's boilerplate with us. We try to listen intently. We try to determine that the project is viable. And if it's viable, then what's the scope of it? And as I said at the start, selling, you know, 500,000 trade paperbacks on newsprint is different than selling 5,000 full-color books. And so you have to know kind of what the marketplace is and all of that. And, you know, it goes well. So it's, what we do is just, it's a little bit different. There are times when we have, like, for example, the Long Southern Road. That's something I've wanted to do for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And I just finally said, okay, this year we're doing this book. So we started that book.
Okay.
Sometimes, for example, with the Buford and the Hilton Head books, we needed a fresh book in that marketplace, in our hometown marketplaces. And I had the concept, I just had to kind of put it together, and so Ryan Copeland, who's with the Packet and the Gazette, wrote the text. He also is a lifelong Bufordtonian, and he said he and his wife have known each other since birth. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but it works for them. Just joking. Anyway, so he really knew Buford, he knows our area here, he lived here, and so he was a natural to write those. But in that case, I went to him. So we field calls weekly. You know, people are always pitching us for ideas and books. So, yeah.
Can you help us understand what makes a book viable, especially in your market? Like, what factors?
Yes, in our marketplace, we look at a number of things. The first being is what's similar to this in a marketplace. Then we try to figure out, you know, will people want it? I mean, we're just very simple. Will people want this book? What's interesting about this book? Why will they want it? From there, we then determine the marketplace and the cost of getting it into that marketplace, the cost of sales, which, as I was just talking to someone yesterday, I said, you do realize that a book advance, the reason it's called an advance is that it's an advance against future earnings. And they looked at me and they said, really? I said, yes. And if it, you know, if you don't meet the projected, you know, sales, they will get that back from you with interest. It was all new to her. Anyway. You know, so what we try to do is we try to figure all that out. If at the end of that, I typically have two good discussions with potential authors to get to that point. I want to hear their vision. I want to discern a lot about them. And I want to know how they see themselves in the market, where they see themselves in the market. Then we go back, we do our due diligence, we put our numbers in our spreadsheets, and at the end of the exercise, if it's equitable, then we will likely go ahead with it. So, that answer you? Yes, sir.
Do you have on staff designers, or do you use outside designers as well? And do you do your production on staff?
Yes, no, it's all, my people have worked for me for many, many years. My lead designer has been with me 18 years.
Okay, so most of your products are home designed?
Yes, mm-hmm. Okay. yes, it's our brand and they work for me, so, yes.
So we've learned a lot about marketing as Robin.
It's all about marketing, right?
You write the book, you're like, well, that was easy, that's hard. Well, that's nothing compared to actually marketing this thing. So as part of your services, and I'll caveat that we have spoken about a book, so I will qualify that we can have a long discussion about my children's book. We walked away with the feeling that we were going to do the majority of that marketing. Is that the case for most of your books?
It just depends. It depends on what we establish. Specifically in your marketplace, you have more entree into that marketplace than we do because you're already in it. Yeah.
As teachers. But sometimes you can take the lead because you have more entree,
yes,
more
and
relationships,
we do.
Mm-hmm. Or more access to that distribution.
Yes, we do. Okay. For example, if someone, let's just say it's a, let's just call it a generalized book, because your book is specific to a certain age group and their parents. So that would just go out to our retail, our retail store network, our wholesale network, all throughout the South. And
that's your primary target.
Yeah, so we do, most of the books that we publish here are, they at some point they smack of the South, whichever way you want to go. I do other projects. I do a lot in the Pacific Northwest, but those books generally are not going to fly here, vice versa. I do projects over in Europe, and those books are likely not going to fly here. And we produce books that we don't sell. We do some special edition books that the public's never going to see. And everything in between. So, yes.
You're obviously at a higher end of the publishing with your books, with the cost of color, paper, everything else. Can you give us an idea of what the cost to go to market might look like?
James, probably not, but I will say this. There's a lot of, let me just say a few things. For example, the printing press that prints this is a different machine than the printing press that prints this. But if this is done efficiently, it's no more cost than this is at this level. It's just that it has to be done efficiently. And I'd like to say, just for the record, that the consumer photo book sites, that's not efficient. That's no way to do anything, period, dot, the end. Just talked to someone yesterday, and I said, so how much do you get on that, on her blurb book? She said, well, I'm asking $95. And I said, how's that selling for you? She said, nobody will give me any money. They just laugh. I said, well, of course they would. So that's not the way to go about it. And what we do, further to Jean's point, we print all over the world because we're seeking a high level of craftsmanship and color reproduction and efficient costing. And because I've drank printing ink since I was 4 years old, I know a little bit about printing and how that all goes. So people tend to think that you can only have so many photos and they can only be this size and all that. All that stuff is really out the window. it doesn't apply anymore. And if it's done efficiently in a trade paperback, you can have as many photos as you want. If they're charging you per piece for a photo, it's just so they can make more money, you know. But that's really not the reality of it anymore. So, is that a question? Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Okay, let's suppose you've got a book and it's got a bunch of photos in it and it's got like a novel with a bunch of pictures. How do you go about getting the pictures to the right size and the right place?
That can be done in two different ways. For example, and I don't have a sample here, but you can have a book that has running photos in it. And in the case of, if it's predominantly a reading book and it's on uncoated paper, then you probably want to limit the photos to black and white, or in other words, the same color of ink as the text, so that it's cost efficient. If the photos are color and you want them to appear in color, and yet the rest of the book is printed on uncoated text, because that feels nice when you're reading words, a lot of words, you kind of want that, you know, that tactile feel, then I would suggest a section in the middle that might be 16 pages, 8 pages, 32 pages. It has to be a certain increment where you can put color photos in there. So you could have a color section, and that would likely be on coated paper for the best reproduction, like this is coated.
And you can size the pictures up and down from
yes.
whatever.
Yes.
Start with.
Let me speak to that too. Yes. In running text, there are ways to insert a photograph at whatever size you want it to be, with adequate space around it, white space around its edges, and have it run with the text, so that if you said, okay, I'm going to insert three paragraphs here, what's going to happen to that photo? That photo will travel with its text and it will stay in place where it needs to be. So, does that answer your question? Okay. So, but we use any number of ways to size or group things, and that's part of the planning and the calculations. If a book has 45,000 words, I can tell you roughly how many pages it's going to be. Or if it's got 45,000 words and 120 photos, we can tell you about how big that's going to be. Because we have to know that to be able to lay out the economics of the project from start to finish. We have to know all of that in between, so we do a lot of calculations to come up with that. Yes.
A lot of writers in this room are self-published, and I think one driving motivation for that has to do with the income that a writer will get from a project. Can you give us some idea of what you offer writers in terms of a percentage of student? How do you work the economics of it?
Well, we are not a traditional publishing company. So we work in a number of different ways. We do, let's say, well, I'm just going to talk to you in concrete examples because I don't like theory. I'm just going to tell you, we do, I have several authors and we've done a number of books for each of them. I know what to expect from them, and therefore I can craft a publishing agreement that will get them to do what they're good at and allow us to do what we're good at. So in that case, for example, I'm getting ready to start a fourth book by a particular photographer. And in that particular case, after the wholesale discount and the cost of sales, we simply split the profit. To go into a store is at least 40% of the SRP. A store really prefers to have 50 to 60% of the SRP. Then you have your sales cost. The sales cost of getting into that store is typically 15 to 20%. That can go up. So what are we at now?
A lot.
A lot. You have to get it on volume or price. It's like a scale, and it'll tip either way. When you have a reading book, this one's $24.95. When you have a reading book, they don't cost much to produce. The SRP can vary from, let's say, $14.99 to $19.99. In a typical boilerplate publishing contract, the author is going to get 10% net. That's not very much, and that takes a lot of books to make anything. Our authors do a lot better than that. One of the reasons that they do a lot better than that is that we typically start with a book that has a higher SRP. We like $34.95. We do this with a lot of gift books. And the consumer has no problem with this price point because we're giving them real high quality. And that's our niche. And our ideal sale is somebody buys one and then they go, you know, I've got to give a gift. And they buy two. They buy one for themselves, they feel good enough about it to buy one as a gift. That's a very high compliment to us. We really appreciate when people do that. But it's, you know, it's a tough business. You know, publishers get a lot of rap for not paying the authors, but when you look at the pie and what is there, and all the slices that come out of it, it's very narrow margins. I'll just, you know, be honest with y'all. Y'all know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. We do it in a slightly different way because I know this way works, and I've researched it, and I've been in the business a long time. But it's a challenge. If you're not selling 20, 30, 50,000 of a title, you're just not going to get anywhere. Doesn't mean you won't make any money, but it does mean that you may not make a living. Now, if you're doing another type of writing, you know, there's lots of ways to make money in writing and being an author. But it is it's about scale. It really comes down to scale. So, did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Well, thank you all for your time. I've enjoyed talking to you. Thank you, Sarah, for talking. It's a great honor to speak to you all and be amongst peers in the business.
Thank you.